Welcome everyone to the Sunday Love Feast program. So we'll read from Bhagavad Gita as it is. So tonight we'll recite the verse from chapter 13 of Bhagavad Gita, verse number 23. Okay, so we'll recite this responsibly, so please repeat after me. Upadrishta Hanumantha cha.
Upadrishta Hanumantha cha.
Bhartha Bhokta Maheshwaraha.
Bhartha Bhokta Maheshwaraha.
Paramatmeti chapyukto.
Paramatmeti chapyukto.
Dehesmin Purusha Paraha.
Dehesmin Purusha Paraha.
Upadrishta Anumantha cha.
Upadrishta Anumantha cha.
Bharta Bhokta Maheshwaraha.
Bharta Bhokta Maheshwaraha.
Paramatmeti chapyukto.
Paramatmeti chapyukto.
Dehesmin Purusha Paraha.
Dehesmin Purusha Paraha.
Upadrishta Hanumantha cha.
Upadrishta Hanumantha cha.
Bharta Bhokta Maheshwaraha.
Bharta Bhokta Maheshwaraha.
Paramatmeti chapyukto.
Paramatmeti chapyukto.
Dehesmin Purusha Paraha.
Dehesmin Purusha Paraha.
Translation, sir, please repeat. Yet in this body,
there is another,
a transcendental enjoyer, who is the Lord, the Supreme Proprietor,
who exists
as the overseer
and permitter,
and who is known as the Super Soul. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki. It is stated here that the Super Soul, who is always with the individual soul, is the representation of the Supreme Lord. He is not an ordinary living entity. Because the monist philosophers take the knower of the body to be one, they think that there is no difference between the Super Soul and the individual soul. To clarify this, the Lord says that He is represented as the Paramatma in every body. He is different from the individual soul. He is para, the transcendental. The individual soul enjoys the activities of particular field, but the Super Soul is present not as finite enjoyer, nor as one taking part in bodily activities, but as the witness, overseer, permitter, and supreme enjoyer. His name is Paramatma, not Atma, and he is transcendental. It is distinctly clear that the Atma and Paramatma are different. The Super Soul, the Paramatma, has legs and hands everywhere, but the individual soul does not. And because the Paramatma is the Supreme Lord, he is present within to sanction the individual soul's desiring material enjoyment. Without the sanction of the Supreme Soul, the individual soul cannot do anything. The individual is bhokta, or the sustained, and the Lord is bhokta, or the maintainer. There are innumerable living entities, and he is staying in them as a friend. The fact is that every individual living entity is eternally part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and both of them are very intimately related as friends. But the living entity has the tendency to reject the sanction of the Supreme Lord and act independently in an attempt to dominate nature. And because he has the tendency, he is called the marginal energy of the Supreme Lord. The living entity can be situated either in the material energy or in the spiritual energy. As long as he is conditioned by the material energy, the Supreme Lord as his friend, the super soul, stays with him just to get him to return to the spiritual energy. The Lord is always eager to take him back to the spiritual energy. But due to the minute independence, the individual entity is constantly rejecting the association of the spiritual light. This misuse of independence is the cause of his material strife in this conditioned nature. The Lord, therefore, is always giving instruction from within and from without. From without, he gives the instruction as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, and from within, it tries to convince the living entity and his activities, the living entity, that his activities in the material field are not conducive to real happiness. Just give up and turn your faith towards me, then you will be happy, he says. Thus, the intelligent person who places his faith in the Paramatma or the Supreme Personality of Godhead begins to advance towards the blissful, eternal life of knowledge. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Kaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Yadati Svaparantikam Vancha Kalpatharupyasya Kripasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabho Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Yet in this body there is another, a transcendental enjoyer, who is the Lord, the Supreme Proprietor, who exists as the overseer and permitter, and who is known as the Super Soul. So just to give a background of this verse, which is a very famous verse from the chapter 13 of the Bhagavad Gita, which is entitled as?
Nature, Enjoyer
and Consciousness. So in this chapter, the most intimate associate of Supreme Lord, the Arjuna, asks six different questions. And the Lord answers them systematically one after the other. So this particular verse which we recited today comes in a section where Lord Krishna explains about the nature and the enjoyer, the Prakriti and Purusha section of that chapter. Now this verse I chose because this verse has a lot of significance both from etymologically and also from the contextually. Now from etymologically, why this verse is important? As you know, Bhagavad Gita, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains different philosophical aspects, different concepts. But the most interesting part of the Bhagavad Gita is some of the most interesting concepts, they are not explained directly, but they are explained in more of an indirect, confidential way. So you take any subjects, Krishna explains so many concepts, Atma, soul, super soul, different types of yoga, which is the best yoga one can practice. What is our relations with the Supreme Lord? What is how this material nature is formed? So many different aspects are explained in the Bhagavad Gita. And some of the most important ones, they are kept confidential. In fact, when Krishna wants to explain those, some of the most important aspects of Bhagavad Gita, it does not even use those words. For example, Krishna is explaining different types of yoga right from 2nd chapter all the way till 18th chapter, right? Then which yoga does he really recommend after explaining all these yogas? Which one does he really recommend?
Bhakti yoga.
Bhakti yoga, right?
But how often does Krishna use the word Bhakti Yoga in the entire Bhagavad Gita? Just once. And that too, not in the Bhakti section of the Bhagavad Gita, but rather in the 14th chapter where he says, Mamcha Yoga Vibhicharena Bhakti Yoga in the Sevate. That's the only way Krishna says the Bhakti Yoga. Otherwise, there is no mention of Bhakti Yoga. So same way, some of our acharyas mentioned that the sole purpose of Krishna speaking Bhagavad Gita is to glorify Srimati Radharani. Now you must be thinking, how is that true? If you look at it, Bhagavad Gita says that the highest level is the bhakti. The bhakti, who is bhakti? Bhakti is a personification of Srimati Radharani. Srimati Radharani is a personification of bhakti. And Srimati Radharani is the internal potency of the Supreme Lord, and she is the feminine aspect of the Supreme Lord. So glorifying bhakti is indirectly glorifying Srimati Radharani. So that's that. But how often does Srimati Radharani's name comes in the Bhagavad Gita? Not even once. Same way, Krishna starts in Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, instruction with the soul. And then in the fifth chapter, he introduced the concept of super soul, Paramatma. And then we use Paramatma so many times. So how often does Krishna use the word Paramatma in Bhagavad Gita? Just once. And that is in today's verse where we tell. What is it? What is the verse? Paramatmeti chapyukto, the third line. That's the only words Krishna said. You might see the word Param and Atma many times, but Paramatma is a combined word. It comes only once in the Bhagavad Gita. So that's why this verse is also very significant from that perspective, from the etymological perspective. Now, from the perspective of the contextually why this verse is important, to understand that, we have to look at the verse which is prior to this, that is verse number 13.22, where Krishna explains why we are suffering in this world. What is the root cause of our suffering in this world? Now, if you ask anyone, why are you suffering? People might say, well, I am suffering because I lost my job, I lost my wealth, I lost my loved ones, my health is not good. So many excuses people give that they are suffering. But are those really the real cause of suffering? If you are given a chance to go inside, visit a prison and interview the prisoners and ask them, why are they suffering? Some of them might say, I'm suffering because the food is not good, it's too much. Some say the fan is not working. Some say the windows are too small. The bed is too hard. But are those the real reason why are they suffering? What is the reason? Real reason? The real reason is the first, why are they in the prison in the first place, right? So that is the main cause of suffering. So Krishna also mentions in the Bhagavad Gita in 13.22, what is our root cause of suffering in this material world? He said, Purusha prakati stoi bhunte prakati janguna. That our root cause is because we have left the spiritual world and we are in this material world and we are trying to enjoy the three modes of material nature, and that is why we are suffering. And what happens because of that? It says, karanam guna sangastya sat asat yoni janmashu. Because we have come in contact with the three modes of material nature, we take birth in different yonis, different womb, and in every life, whether it's a human being or an animal or birds, it does not matter, we're constantly suffering. So now Arjuna gets scared, actually confused. That means we are completely in a hopeless situation here. We are, okay, we left spiritual world, we made a mistake. So does that mean we are in a completely hopeless situation? To address that concern, to answer that question, Krishna speaks the words which we recited today. He says, don't worry. I am seated in everyone's heart as a Paramatma, the super soul, and I'm constantly observing you and I'm sanctioning the different action. So this is how Krishna is so merciful. Even though we are inside the prison, Krishna says that I'm with you all the time. So this is the main reason. And what is his function as a super soul within our heart? What is his function? Upadrishta and Anumanta. Upadrishta means he is overseeing everything, and Anumanta means he is permitting all our action. So those are the two main aspects, those are the two things, main thing Krishna does as a Paramatma within our heart. Now if you look at these two functions, right, overseeing something and permitting something, they are generally the maintenance aspect of a job, right? If you are asked to maintain a school or a temple or a church or something, if you are asked to maintain, what do? You oversee different things and you also have the permission, you can give the permission. So those are the things. So Krishna is saying that I'm the maintainer indirectly. I'm maintainer of this world. Now, does that mean he's not the creator and someone else has created and he's just doing the maintenance? Not really. Actually, until 15th century, everyone believed that God is a creator as well as the maintainer. Whether people in East or West, everyone had a concept. God is a creator and the maintainer. And this is what is known as theism. There was a theistic society prevalent in all over the world. Bhagavad Gita also supports this concept. The words which we recited today talks about how Krishna is the maintainer of this world. There are a lot of verses in Bhagavad Gita which talks about Krishna is also the creator of this world. Krishna says this, I am the creator of this material world as well as the spiritual world and everything emanates from me. What is the verse for that? Aham sarvasya prabhavo vata sarvam pravartate. Very famous verse from the 10th pointage. So he is the creator of both these worlds. Now, does that mean somebody else has created all the living entities, like all the human beings and the animals, everything? Krishna says, no. Aham bija pradapata pitaha. It means, I am the seed-giving father for everyone. So he is saying that, I am also creator of living entities. I am creator for all the material world. So basically, he is the creator of everything. So Bhagavad Gita also supports this. But something started changing around the 15th century till the 19th century. So, Sir Isaac Newton, who was sitting under the apple tree, apple fell down on his head and he came out with a theory of gravity, law of gravity. Archimedes was taking a bath in a bathtub, he jumped out of the bathtub and he came out with the law of buoyancy. So for every fall, every jump, every catch, people started analyzing this material world separately from the Lord. So they came up with so many different theories. Law of gravity, law of buoyancy, law of kinetic energy, law of potential energy, thermodynamics, refraction, all these so many different laws. And then people started feeling, you know what? Actually, God is not maintaining this world. These laws are maintaining that. These different laws which are in the material world, they are maintaining this. So God is not a maintainer, but He is only the creator. So this concept that God is the creator but not the maintainer is what is known as deism. So we moved away from theism to deism. So deistic, the society was called deistic society was those days. Now you might feel that nowadays nobody believes this. But actually, if you go to some of the Eastern European countries, this concept is still very prevalent where people feel that God is just a creator but He's not a maintainer. It's like buying a clock or some piece of furniture. There is a creator. Somebody creates this. But once He creates, He doesn't have any control over it. Right? You are the one. So this is how people feel the God's role in this world. But there were some scientists who were kind of trying to knock down completely. If there is any way we can prove that God is not creator, then we can get rid of the God completely, right? So, and they thought, finally they had a breakthrough in the 19th century. There were two main theories were come into picture which proved that God is not a creator. The first one is that Charles Darwin proposed the theory of evolution, where he says, Krishna says that Aham Bija Pradapitaha, I am the seed-giving father. Darwin said, no. All human beings are created because of evolution, theory of evolution. In the beginning, there was a small single-set amoeba, and there was evolution, there was the flies and the birds and the aquatics and so many things, a monkey, and finally there was a human being. So Darwin said there is a theory of evolution. However, Bhagavatam says that no. Actually, Bhagavatam proves that theory of devolution. According to Darwin, as something complex has come from something simple, complexity has arrived from the simplicity. Bhagavatam says, no, theory of devolution. Something from something which is complex, something simple has come. Simplicity has come from the complexity. Why? Who is the first living entity created in this whole world? Brahma is the most complex person, most intelligent person. And Brahma created all other living entities, including human beings, including flies, including amoeba. So this concept is totally opposite to what Bhagavatam says. Now, Krishna says that he is the creator of material and spiritual world also. Now, how to knock that down, right? Okay, we knock down the living entities. How to knock that down? So there was a theory of Big Bang. Big Bang says, Krishna says that I am the creator. The Big Bang says no. There is a big explosion. There is a big like a terrorist attack, and suddenly all the beautiful universes have created. I mean, think about it. If it can happen, it will be so beautiful, right? So nice. But see, these are the two theories which knocked down the God's role in this material world. So people started believing God is not a creator, not a maintainer, and this is what is known as atheism. So the society was becoming more and more atheistic. This is the reason why Srila Prabhupada was so much against these two particular theories, because these theories were pulling people away from the Supreme Lord. So now, Krishna says that I am Upadrashta and Anumanta. I am sanctioning everything and I am overseeing everything. Does that mean God is responsible for everything in this world? Is He responsible for all the earthquakes and tsunamis? Is He responsible for all the accidents? Is He responsible for if you win a lotto or if you lose a ball? Is He responsible for everything? Actually, the real question what we need to ask is not whether He is responsible for everything, but rather, is God doing this act alone? He might have the power of Anumantha, like He might have the power of permission, giving the permission, but is He doing this act alone by Himself, or is He consulting with somebody else, or is there a multiple causes involved? Right? See, there is a lot of confusion about this, what is the role of God in this world. Generally, people think that if any action is beyond our control, that is act of God. That is, for example, earthquake, act of God. Tsunami, act of God. Any actions within our control is act of human beings, right? Accident, act of human beings. Burglary, theft, act of human beings. If you go home and look at your home insurance policy carefully, even if it is written by an atheist person, there will be some clause about act of God. They will say that under, if it is the act of God, it will not cover the expenses. So even if it is written by an atheist. So what is act of God? What is act of human being? So that's a confusion. Who decides what is act of God then? Actually, and this confusion is there all the time. If you ask a scientist why earthquake is happening, they will say, earthquake is happening because there is a fault line, because of the movement of tectonic plate underneath the ground. So why do you bring the God into picture? It's just because of the movement of the plates. So God does not have to be there. If you ask the spiritualist, they will say, no, earthquake is also sanctioned by the Lord. That's what the words which we recited today. Because Krishna says, I am Anumanta, I am overseeing and sanctioning. It means God has actually sanctioned the earthquake. Now the question is, why would God sanction an earthquake? Why would we do that when there is so much damage, so many casualties, so much loss? Why would God do that? And these are the questions people generally ask whenever there is a major disaster. And if we cannot answer these questions properly, philosophically, then people will tend to become atheistic, or sometimes they even become agnostic. They will go against the God. So it is important that we understand how things are happening in this material world. Bhagavad Gita has the perfect answer why there is an earthquake, for that matter, why any action happens in this world. So, according to Bhagavad Gita, any action in this material world is not caused by the single cause, not happening by the single cause. It is happening because of multiple causes. It's not just because of one cause. And what are those multiple causes which make every action in this material world? Very simple answer. 3Js. You ask, if anyone asks you why there is earthquake, 3J. Why there is an accident, 3J. Why there is anything, you lost money, 3J. Why somebody fell down, 3J. So any action in this material world can be explained by three J's. Very easy to remember, right? Simple formula. Now, what are those three J's? Every action in this material world is created by Jiva, Jagat and Jagadish. Jiva means living entity, and living entity is the desiring or initiating cause for every action. Jagat is the material nature, is the facilitating or execution cause of the any action. And Jagadish, super soul, is a sanctioning. Aham upadrishta anumantacha. So that's what Krishna says. So he is the sanctioning cause of this any action in this material. So all these three causes are embedded in every action in this material world. There is not even a single action where these three elements are not there. Now, let's take an example. The earthquake. How can we explain this earthquake in terms of these three J's? Now, the scientists will say that earthquake has happened because of the fault line or because of the movement of tectonic plate underneath the ground. Now, is it correct or is it false?
Correct.
Is it correct? So it is correct, but it's partially correct. See, actually the answer is correct, but it's not complete. That's the key. Because when scientists are explaining the movement of plates or the fault line, which J out of 3J are they looking for? The Jagat. They actually look for only one J. They explain based on only one J, which is Jagat. And they kind of completely ignore the other two J's, which is Jiva and Jagadish. Now, just to give an analogy, how scientists look at this world or all actions, right? Now, many of you play pool or billiards, right? Suppose if you have a camera and you focus your camera right on the table, and the focus is the perimeter of the table is the focus of your camera. And then you ask a scientist to look at it and explain what is happening. The scientist will look at this because he's looking just at the table. And he will say, when the stick hits the white ball at 24.5 degrees, and then that white ball hits the black ball with 38 degree angle, and if the surface has a certain friction, if the humidity is certain, then there is a probability of 0.875. So they will come up with some formula for that. Now, is that true or false? That is true, actually. That what they are explaining is right, because they are explaining based on the Jagat. However, this Bhagavad Gita or any scripture, Bhagavatam, when they look at it, they are not looking at just the boundary of this table, they are looking at the boundary outside the table. So, when they are saying that, yes, the balls are moving in different directions and certain angle and all this, but someone has really initiated this cause. There is a conscious decision. Somebody is making that. And that is what scriptures are saying. So when scientists are saying the earthquake has happened because of this, that's true. But Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita says it is also happened because it's initiated by someone and it's sanctioned by someone. So that is the complete explanation. Now let's take another example, another action, and let's see how we can explain this according to the three J's. Say you are in a central park. And you are walking around, there are so many people, so many dogs are there, and suddenly one dog comes and bites you. Now, how do you explain this with three J's? Of course, Jiva, you, is getting bitten because maybe you have some bad karma. Maybe you bit somebody like Mike Tyson or somebody in previous years. Something happened, that's why the dog has come. Now, the dog's body is Jagat, material nature. The dog does not have an intelligence. Dog just goes by the instinct. Dog doesn't try to analyze, okay, out of these people, okay, you have the bad karma, let me come and bite you. Dog doesn't do that analysis. So who sanctions that, guides that? The super soul within the dog says, okay, you want to bite today, that's fine, but go and bite this person. Who is that? Because he is sanctioning and permitting that. So this is how every action in this material world has three J's always. So this, you can think of any action, and there will be always three J's. Now the question comes, if Krishna within our heart is overseeing and is sanctioning every act based on our previous karma, previous you know, like what we have in store, then what is the meaning of destiny? Right? What is destiny then? Does that mean that every action what we have in this life is predetermined? Are we walking on a path where every action is predefined and we are walking like a robot? Then why are we working hard then, if everything is predetermined? If I don't work properly and if I lose my job, if I get laid off, is it destiny? Is it if I drive carelessly and if I meet an accident, is it destiny or is it my carelessness? If I'm not taking care of my health, if I start eating junk food, then I have obesity and high blood pressure. Is that because of destiny? Is that true that every marriage is made in heaven, that you, whoever you are going to get as a husband and wife, everything is predetermined because it's destiny? Is that true? So what is destiny actually? It's a very interesting question we all need to ask. Actually, the way we look at destiny and the way scriptures look at destiny are totally different. We think destiny in terms of happiness and miseries, happiness and distress we get in this life. But that is not fixed. That is very dynamic. It can change. When scriptures talk about destiny, they talk in terms of how many hurdles, how much support system you are going to get in this life according to your previous credit. So that can be fixed for some people. So, destiny, if it is the hurdles and the support system what you are getting, that can be fixed. But that itself doesn't mean, that itself doesn't drive the happiness and miseries what you are going to get in this life. Happiness and the miseries what we face in this life depends upon what we do in this life itself. Doesn't have to depend completely on the previous life. So, how we use our free will, our freedom, what Krishna has given, that's what Prabhupada explains in the purport. How we use our freedom, free will, has a significant influence on what we are going to get in this world. Therefore, destiny is what we face because of previous life. And free will is how we react. Destiny plus free will together will determine happiness and distress. So when Krishna says, upadrishta anumantarcha, the word upadrishta, that overseeing, applies to the free will portion of this equation. How you are using your free will, how you are using your freedom, that's the portion he is talking about. And when he says anumanta, I'm permitting, he's talking about, he's referring to the destiny portion of this equation. So both these together will determine happiness and distress. Now, to think that destiny alone will, you know, determine happiness in distress is what is generally known as Daivavad. And people in India generally have this misconception. For everything what happens in their life, they will say, oh, it's my karma. You know, it's my destiny. So that is known as Daivavad. On the other extreme, to think that exercising your free will alone will determine the happiness and distress is what is known as Karmavad. And that is more prevalent here in the Western countries. You work hard and you can become a Bill Gates. You can become the next president. Everyone believes that. But how many people, those who have worked hard, those who have dropped out from school, have become Bill Gates? It's not possible. Because happiness and distress comes from both destiny as well as free will. Both are important. That is why Padma Puran gives an very good example about the farmer, which we always discuss, right? The farmer. If it is in farmer's destiny, there is going to be rain this year, and if he uses his free will to work hard and plow the land and, you know, do all those things, then there will be harvest. Just because there is the rain, he's not going to harvest. If there is no rain and if he works 18 hours a day in the field, still he's not going to get the harvest. Both are required. So that is what it is required. So destiny plus free will determine. So then, what is destiny? So, to give another example, you can consider destiny is more like a weather forecast. You know, some of us are born with a very good, beautiful forecast. There's like sunny days and, you know, like perfect humidity and everything is perfect. Some of us are born with a very gloomy forecast. Some of us have like a lot of rain. Some of us have a lot of winter and sleet and everything. However, the weather you can think destiny as in terms of weather forecast. But weather forecast itself is not going to determine what is the final outcome. If it is in your destiny that there is going to be rain, then if you go out with an umbrella or a poncho, then what is it? Then there is not much impact. Same way, if it is in your destiny, there is going to be a snowfall and sleet and 3 feet of snow. If you are well prepared for that, if you have a proper shoes and the dress, then that does not matter. So, what matters is how we use free will and face that weather forecast. How we face that destiny is much more important. So, the outcome in this world depends primarily on how we act in this world. How we use our free will. Using free will means how we perform our duty in this material world. So, that is why performance of the duty is much more important than what you have in the destiny. We should not get too much carried away by what is in our destiny. We should focus on the duty in the current life and current life. So that is more important. That is why the duty is much more important than the destiny. And if you read any scriptures, you will see this theme all over. There is more importance is given to the duty than the destiny. Let's take two examples. The first example, when Devaki got married to Vasudeva, and Kamsa was riding the chariot for the newly married couple. And then there is suddenly a celestial voice which said, the eighth son of Devaki will kill Kamsa. Now what did Kamsa do? Immediately he removed his sword and he wanted to kill his sister Devaki at that moment. Now, how Vasudeva is reacting this is very interesting. First, he is focusing on the duty. He says, my dear Kamsa, Devaki is your sister, and as a sister, and also you are the king, it's your responsibility to protect your sister and protect women. So why are you killing her? So he is focusing on the duty. Now Kamsa didn't listen to that, he was still wanted to kill. Now when the duty is not, when person is not convinced with the duty, then the topic of destiny comes into picture. Now the Vasudeva turns around completely the logic, and he says, now he talks about the destiny. And now he tells the Vasudeva, my dear brother-in-law Kamsa, if it is in your destiny that eighth child of his Devaki is going to kill you, then why are you killing Devaki? There's no point. It's in your destiny. Just leave her. Maybe you worry about the eighth child, so you can leave her. Now, very interesting point at this point you have to understand. At this point, Vasudeva is not thinking, if it is in Devaki's destiny that she has to be killed by her brother, why should I interfere with that? Right? He could have thought about that. No, he is focusing on his duty as a husband to protect his wife. So you can see the duty is always given more importance than the destiny. Second example, just before the Kurukshetra war began, Vidura was a very intelligent man. He goes one last time to meet Dhritarashtra, who was a king. And he says, my dear brother Dhritarashtra, you are the king. You have the full control. If you decide, you can stop this Kurukshetra war right now. Please do something. Now Dhritarashtra at that time says, my dear Vidura, if destiny has it in store that there has to be a war, who am I supposed to stop it? Now, Dhritarashtra is trying to act a little funny here. You know? He said, destiny has in store, then why should I stop it? Now, Vidura was so intelligent, he immediately cuts him off. And there's a very important verse in the Mahabharata where he says, destiny does not determine your action. Rather, destiny determines the consequences of your actions. Very important. Destiny does not determine your actions, but destiny determines the consequences of your actions. What it means is, if you are on an empire state building on top floor, destiny will not force you to jump from the empire state building. But if you decide to jump, destiny will determine what will happen to you. So, destiny will determine what is the consequences of your action, but it's not going to force you what is going to be your action. So, that is important. That is why focusing on our duty is much more important than the destiny. In fact, if we focus too much on our destiny and not the duty, it's practically impossible to live in this world. Like the baby is crying, and if mother thinks, oh, it's in destiny, it's suffering. What will happen to the baby? Right? If the patient is dying and suffering, and that the doctors think, oh, it's in his destiny to die today, so let me not do anything. Nothing will happen. We cannot practically work. Same with the firefighters. They cannot say, the house is burning because of the destiny. So we practically cannot live in this world if we think more on destiny, but rather than the duty. This is why it's important that as a devotee also, we always should focus on duty and not the destiny. If a devotee is suffering because of legal issue, health issue, family issue or something, we should never say it's his karma or destiny. That's completely wrong. We should think about what is our duty at the time to help that devotee. That is much more important. Philosophically, we might be right to say that it's because of his destiny or karma. But philosophy is not that important. Even on the path of bhakti, there's a sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti and prema bhakti. Philosophy will take you only up till sadhana bhakti. But beyond sadhana, there's a bhava and prema bhakti, not the philosophy, but your emotions, the loving relationship, that will actually what will take us to the highest level. So we should focus on more on the duty than the destiny. Life is full of choices. We can use our free will in every step. What you want to eat, what you want to drink, what you want to read, whom you want to associate, everything has a free will. You have a free will to do. If you can align that with your duty, then the life can be blissful. If, yes, you know, people say the marriages are made in heaven, but doesn't mean that who you are going to get is fixed by destiny. You can still focus on what is your duty, whether the partner you are going to get, does he or she align with your duty? Then if you can do that conscious decision, then it can be wonderful. You know, there's a saying that all marriages are made in heaven. But if you don't your free will properly, then you realize it's not just the marriages are not made in heaven, but so as thunderstorms and lightnings are also made in heaven. You know? So it's important that we use our duty more, give it more importance than the destiny. So that is the key. Now someone might say, I'm doing my duties properly. I'm doing that, I'm focusing. But still my destiny is so bad, I'm suffering one after the other. Is there any way I can change my destiny so? That's a good question, right? So, in other words, I have a very gloomy forecast. Can I make it beautiful like one of the Caribbean islands? Can I change my forecast from a gloomy forecast to the beautiful forecast? And Krishna says, yes. Actually, our scripture says yes. If you use your free will to practice devotional service, if you can attain love of Godhead, then that usage of free will can change your destiny. So free will, the duty, has a power to change your destiny, but destiny does not have any influence on your duty. See, that's a beautiful. So that is why we should focus on our duty much more than the destiny. If you ask any astrologer, even the best astrologer, they will tell you that astrology, the prediction is correct. They can predict 100% right until that person starts receiving the mercy of the Lord. Then the prediction is not right at all. Why? Because the astrology depends upon the destiny. Now, by devotional service, if you change the destiny, it means you are changing the foundation of that astrology. So, that means you have the power even to change the destiny. So that is why we all should focus on our duty and not the destiny. So to summarize, Krishna says in today's verse, he is Upadrashta Hanumanta, he is overseeing and sanctioning. So Krishna is the creator and the maintainer of this world. Now does not, just because he is creator and the maintainer does not mean he is a single cause, but the cause, every action is happening because of three J's, Jiva, Jagat and Jagadish. And the destiny, it means the how much hurdles and the support system we are going to get. But destiny, if we use our free will properly, we can change those hurdles, we can change those any problems we are getting because of the previous life. So that is the key we have to understand from this verse. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.